Like the show? Want to listen to episodes early? Consider becoming a patron. Starting at the $3 a month level, patrons get access to a custom patron-only feed where we put out episodes of upstairs studio podcasts like the Childcare Bar and Grill, Miss Becky's Classroom, That Early Childhood Nerd, the Renegade Rules podcast, and others early. That feed is just for patrons. You could be one of them. Go to patreon.com/playvolutionhq or click the link in the show description to learn more. Childcare Bar and Grill podcast. Jeff Johnson with you live from upstairs studio. In studio with me is Lisa Murphy.
Hello.
And Sam Balch.
Hi.
We are talking job interviews, specifically in the. Oh, we didn't ask. We're talking early learning job interviews. Is that what we're talking about, or just in general?
Yeah. I don't know. That's what we're talking about.
So here's the deal.
Some of the points probably would.
Crossover.
Yeah, the thing is, though, Sam said she had an interview coming up, and I assumed it was in early learning, but I guess I shouldn't assume, so I just wanted to clarify.
You are correct.
So let's jump in. Where should we start?
I feel like we should start with, so you just got an email or a phone call, whatever, saying we'd like you to come in or Skype us or have a phone interview. And so you get that fun, euphoric rush of, yay, they like me. And now what should you do?
Well, it's going to depend on if it's a Zoom, a Skype, or a phone, or an in-person, right? Like, do I need to shave my legs? Do I need to wear pants?
Whoa, time out. I get it. If it's in person, you need to shave your legs. Is that what you're saying?
Well, like if I was wearing shorts or a skirt or something.
Depends on the vibe.
Why? Because they're going to be touching your legs? What kind of job are you interviewing for?
No, that's for me. That means something's happening.
Personal level of comfort, like how comfortable am I, you know, in this new space? What are their grooming standards? You know, if you're interviewing for like an outdoor Waldorf school, or if you're interviewing for a college prep Montessori, like they might have slightly different standards of dress. But you might be able to kind of suss that out. And here's a tip, obviously applies to all sorts of jobs. Maybe dress a little nicer than you think you should. That's always helpful. Don't wear your pajamas. My early learning interview uniform tends to be nice pants, not like dress pants because I don't own any. But like I don't wear jeans. I wear a nice pair of pants. I wear a nice top and sometimes a cardigan or a blazer. And that is like because I wear really comfortable shoes. Because if you're interviewing at any sort of early learning thing, hopefully if it's in person, they're going to show you around or they're going to say like, hey, do you want to sit in this classroom for a little bit? So you want to be able to move and you also want to look, you know, somewhat nice, somewhat, I don't know, put together is kind of a weird phrase.
No, I think listeners know what you mean.
I guess. Yeah. Does that make sense? Like, I don't love that phrase either.
You want to look smart?
Yeah, you want to dress smartly dressed. Like
you don't want to wear a big pointy hat that says dunce on it.
Don't do that. Again, know your audience. Maybe that's useful. But definitely dressing for comfort as well as style. Like my advice, if you're a person that likes to wear heels, if it's an in-person interview, and especially if they've told you you're going to be in the classroom, maybe make them little heels. Or maybe don't wear heels at all, because really that's a time to be in the classroom and see what's going on and talk to the children and be with the children. And maybe there will be a circle time or a song that you get to participate in. And you really don't want to be like uncomfortable doing that.
Well, I guess that's why I didn't get that job. It was my 4-inch heels. I should have wore the kitten heels.
That was a dunce cap.
It was my 4-inch heels and my matching dunce cap that didn't give me the job.
So dress comfortably, be showered, you know, feel good about yourself. Like, if you're the kind of person that makeup makes you feel good, man or woman or other, like, yeah, wear that, do what makes you feel good. I know I feel best when I have, like, blow dried my hair. That makes me feel really good for interviews. I'm going to extend that sort of looking nice and feeling nice to video interviews as well. Because when you're more dressed up, you just, like, you can kind of project that a little differently. If you go to a Zoom interview with a nice shirt and pajama bottoms, like, you're going to know you're wearing pajama bottoms. So, like, I know for me, I'm the kind of person that if I am fully in, like, an interview outfit, in an interview mode, my brain goes there. Maybe you are not. So, like, take that into consideration. Like, right now, none of you can see me. But I'm just very casually, and I would not be wearing this to a Zoom interview.
Yeah, well, at least I guess what we have determined is that we don't rate as high as these strangers Sam is going to do the job interview with. So that's nice. Thanks for that, Sam.
You're welcome. I think we're very casual friends.
If it's going to be a online interview, you really need to go back and listen to the two-part series we just did on Zoom meeting etiquette
based off the
Godin post. So you want to do things like not be naked, probably.
Important. Probably.
Yeah, probably. I guess it depends on the job.
Probably turn on your video. No name. You're not allowed to just have your name up there.
Test your technology before you start using it. Make sure your computer is charged. All sorts of Zoom etiquette. Whew. So
I think it would be fun, Lisa Murphy, if we pretended to interview Sam.
Sure, just yes.
As a practice for her, right. Her job.
And then can we evaluate, like, what questions you're asking and what answers I'm giving?
Oh,
and,
sure.
Like, how we feel about these things.
Honest response, and I'm not saying this to trick you, but just so you know, my interview routine was hellacious. And actually word spread through the community that, like, don't even bother applying if you aren't, like, serious about this job. So the first thing that I did was they would book an appointment, obviously. I would let them know that, or put word out. Back in the old days, we'd put an ad in the paper.
Love it.
And people would respond, and I blocked them in 2-hour time blocks. And the first thing you did was get a copy of the employee handbook, right? The program handbook. And you sat in the living room and you read it. And then you signed off on the fact that either you did or did not have any issue with what was in the handbook. And I did that on purpose so that I would have a baseline. So that because everybody lies during an interview, everybody gives good interview, I like to say. And so this way I had, like, a marker, a way of being able to say, you know, you kind of acknowledge that you understood that this was what's going to be expected.
Well, I think that's a really great practice in a general sense, because if there's something in your handbook that for some reason makes someone else uncomfortable, then you both know right away, hey, this isn't a good fit.
Like, exactly.
Let's walk away. Yeah. I actually do that with everywhere that I interview. I do a lot of, like, background research. If they have a handbook, I try and read it. I try to know parts of their mission statement and, like, what is it that they're looking for? I look for all sorts of stuff because, you know, if they say that, like, and we don't let children sit next to each other at circle time, they have to sit in lines. It's like, okay, well, we're not going to get on well.
Yeah. Yeah. So either there's going to be room for discussion, like you said, or, you know, I like to think that the person would have enough, you know, self-insight to be like, you know what, I'm not sure that this is going to be a good fit. Thanks for your time and get on with it. But usually, you know, no, oh no, this is fine. This is going to be awesome. And then we have the interview and then I end up firing you, you know, 8 weeks later. But that's a whole other different topic. So that's how it would start. And then I had set interview questions of, you know, kind of the basic, tell me about what you've done. And I don't, do you really want to role play like an interview? I haven't been in interview mode in a long time.
No, we got to do this. I'm going to be a character. I'm going to be Larry. Sam, welcome to Happy Camper Fun Time Learning Academy. We reviewed your application. We're glad you came in. I appreciate you finding time for us. I can tell you shower today. You smell good. We appreciate that. You had some time to look over the program handbook, our policy book. I was wondering if you had any questions about that document before we proceed.
Yeah, Larry. First, again, thanks for the time. Glad to be here. I was wondering about you have a section about free play.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering where that takes place. Can the children be outside at that time, inside at that time, a mix of both? Is there a schedule with the classrooms? What does that look like?
Well, we allow the children to play in their individual learning. We call them cubes. We're with the whole COVID thing going on, we're very concerned about social distancing. So we have 6 foot by 8 foot, 4 foot, or it is 6 foot high, plexiglass cubes that each child goes into. We've got some habit trails that connect them, but they're free to play as they wish inside their cubes.
When the pandemic passes, we may
go back to regular play.
Can you clarify how many children are per cube?
Oh, one child per cube. Social distancing.
One child per cube. And can the educators see through the cube?
Well, they're translucent plexiglass, so you can look through the cubes. You'll be responsible for a group of 8 to 12 cubes, and you'll just we do have video cameras, security cameras in each cube, so we don't want you close to the cube, so you'll be able to watch via monitor from the reception area where your caregiver cubicle will be set up. You'll also be in a cube, but slightly larger. We do put down sawdust for, cleanliness. So that's how we handle play.
I really do appreciate your commitment to safety. It really sounds like you all have been thinking this through a lot. Can I ask who's been sort of on your advisory board for making these decisions and how the cube came about?
Well, we have her with us right now. Lisa Murphy, Lisa fucking Murphy, have you heard of her? She was really concerned about the kids and, you know, how some programs use hula hoops, for social distancing. We wanted something a little bit more robust. Lisa didn't come up with the idea, but we pay her we pay her to use her name. She's actually here for the interview now, and Larry pulls a sheet and there's Lisa Murphy behind a curtain.
And I'm standing there with a clipboard and my kitten heels.
I hope so.
Yes, you had some questions about the cube.
Hi, Lisa. Great to see you. Didn't know you were going to be here, but it's great to have you.
Neither did I.
Yeah, so Larry's been telling me about the cubes. And again, like, I appreciate the commitment to safety. There's a lot we don't know about COVID-19. And it's really important to me that the children feel safe and supported and the teachers feel safe and supported and the parents feel safe and supported.
Well, so, pretty much what we did was we did a poll. We did a survey among the current families that were coming to the program, and we found that they were super scared and super hesitant with coming back. So pretty much all we did was say, okay, well, we saw that the grocery stores were putting up the plexiglass. We saw at the airports, like, everybody was just putting up the plexiglass. So we said, you know, why only have a sheet of plexiglass? Let's just build 4 walls to contain the children. And so then the parents drop them off and then they're escorted to their cube and then they just remain in the cube, mostly just so nobody is interacting with anybody whatsoever.
Right. I guess my biggest question about that is, as a teacher, I really rely on children's interactions with each other and with myself for them to construct their learning.
Right, no. Now, we're just not able to make that happen.
Well, to some extent we can, because they are all equipped with some dry erase markers, and they can see each other through the cubes and draw on the cube walls. So
there is that why that child has written help?
Yes.
And you'll notice over the one, we have a new prototype that actually has a slide kind of system, like a depository system where the educator can actually pour some smaller like toys down into where the child could play. So the child could, you know, send a note of some sort requesting that they wanted to change out the materials. And now there's like a chute system. Maybe that might be a better way of describing
it. Well, Lisa, what it is, it's a pneumatic tube system. Like they have the bank drive through. So and that's actually how we get the kids in and out of the tubes too. So we don't have any physical contact. We put them in the big cylinder, and then the compressed air pushes them into their tube. And that's how we bring in and out materials. You mentioned Kimberly's writing help on her tube. What's really neat is she wrote everything backwards. So everybody be able to read it from the reflection. So I think she's one of our most advanced students.
Yeah, I see a lot of ingenuity here. And I have to say that I myself am really concerned with how I could, as the kind of teacher I am, best support children in this environment. So I really want to thank you for your time. I don't think that I'm the best fit for this program.
That was just a test. All of that is made up.
What?
Samantha, you have passed level one. You have passed level one. You've leveled up to the next part of the
interview. Level up.
So explain to us, what kind of teacher are you now that you've seen through our cubicle ruse?
A ruse.
What kind of teacher am I? Well, I'd like to give you some background on who I am, because I think that's helpful for thinking about the kind of teacher I am. So I started as an elementary school teacher in 2014. That is what I got my undergraduate degree in. I taught first and second grade for 2 years, and then I got married to a man who's in the military, so I move around quite a bit.
Secret agent man.
And during those moves, I was really curious, sort of trying to figure out, where do I want to be next? What do I want to do? And I, you know, got to thinking more about some of the experiences I had in college, which were really focused on very young children. So I looked into some programs, just a couple of classes, just kind of coursework for working with young children. So in Florida and Virginia, where the two places I was living at that time, that was considered early childhood. So courses for infants through age 5 was about what those courses were for. And I realized that has so much interest for me. I'm so interested in those stages of development that children go through in the first 5 years of their life, and everything that they can learn through interactions with each other, through interactions with adults. And I have been now working specifically in early childhood with preschool and pre-kindergarten students for the past 3 years. And I have become a teacher that really believes that children need ample opportunities to play and explore, supported by materials and relationships that are interesting and engaging.
But if you were a potted plant, what kind of plant would you be?
There's a really neat kind of plant called a lithop. I believe it's from South Africa. I think it's also called a rock plant, and they thrive on neglect. So you're not really supposed to water them or do much with them at all. And I am definitely that kind of a plant. You know, I just kind of coast along on the outside. I love the outdoors, but I'm not that high maintenance.
I kind of like Larry. Larry's going to have to be back on the show sometime.
Larry was great.
So what are your 3 weak points?
My 3 weak points? Oh boy. Well,
how many are you prepared?
I only have 1 weak point prepared. List all the things you hate about yourself.
Well, the fact that you want to be a plant that's neglected.
Let me get my pen.
I am really learning how to interact and form better relationships with parents. I've always valued parents and what they bring to the table. As a relatively younger teacher who does not have any children, it can sometimes be harder for me to relate to parents because I don't go home to children at the end of the day. I've never done that before. So I'm really learning how to bring parents into a space that is my own, as in my classroom, and be part of their space in their home. So finding ways to relate to them and communicate with them that are more authentic, that give them more of a voice in the classroom. That's something that I've struggled with in the past. I've had some
this past year, my co-teacher, this is one of her strengths. So it's been amazing to observe her and really learn from her and how she communicates with parents and how she sees parent interactions. And I'm definitely growing in that area.
We have a woman working in the class we're considering you for. Name is Karen. She's always in the manager's office, griping about things. How do you find yourself interacting with Karen?
Well, I don't really know Karen, so I'd love to meet her to learn more about her. I know that every co-teacher that I have, what's really important to me is communication and understanding each other. So having a relationship, the two of us, as in the teacher and the teacher, in addition to the relationship that the teachers have to the people in the classroom. So the students in the classroom, whenever parents come in, if we ever have volunteers, making sure that we set aside time at the beginning and end of every day to talk about what's going on, what we're thinking, what do we notice the children playing with, what do we notice the children doing, how are we feeling about what the children are doing. That really, to me, that's how I interact with anyone, no matter what kind of temperament we all have.
Knock, 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 knock.
Come in.
Hello. Hey, so Jeff, I was listening through the door and I want you to hire her and fire Karen. So can we make that happen pretty quick here?
Well, we could, but I'm kind of concerned about the lawsuits. Karen's just real litigious.
Yeah, but you know, oh my gosh, she's just making everybody crazy.
She already owns 41% of our stock. Because I just decided we're a chain center. And I'm scared if we ruffle her feathers anymore, she's going to end up owning the company and none of us want that.
I couldn't help but overhearing the amazing answers that I'm hearing in this interview, and we need more people like Samantha and we need less Karens.
So I think my whole thing is interview questions don't matter. Resumes don't matter. References don't matter.
Have either of you ever called someone's references?
Yes.
And what, like, has that ever been a deal breaker, like in a high, like I'm going to hire this person way?
I will tell you, there's a legal answer to that. excuse me for coughing. COVID or pollen, plague or pollen. No, I actually found out, like, back in the old days, this is my age showing, back in the old days, you could ask very direct questions. So, like, I could ask straight up, why did you let her go? Or why isn't she working there?
Right.
Or talk to me about her strengths and her weaknesses. The only thing legally you can do now is verify that they actually worked for you during the time that they stated. So, to me, I don't know if that's why Jeff was saying that, but to me, checking references is just bullshit. Because, I mean, unless somebody is willing to go off the record or casually let some things, I mean, not that you're looking to get dirt on anybody, but legally nobody.
Yeah, you couldn't ask like, oh, how was it when Samantha worked for you? You would have to call someone and they would have to say, oh, Samantha, she worked here from X to Y and she's so great at these things, or she's so bad at these things.
Yeah,
never hire her.
Right. And that was never the intention, but they were so much more candid, or at least useful, you know, like even just letting me know she was awesome with the school agers, but don't put her in the infant room. Okay, great. That's not like,
yeah.
Why should I have to reinvent that wheel? Like there's checking references used to serve a purpose. And now I would just say, I mean, you have to, I mean, or at least you have to tell licensing if you're
right. That's so interesting. License. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's an HR, it's illegal, it's legal bullshit.
I think, Sam, one thing that would throw up a red flag for me with you if I was interviewing you today is you really don't have a social media footprint. And
true, I don't.
I think everybody that I would be interviewing, I would be doing some sort of look into their social media just to kind of get a vibe on who they were. And that doesn't exist for you, Sam. So not that I'm a stalker.
Not.
I just know that I can't Facebook message you. So my thing would be, is she a terrorist? Is she a spy? What's going on with Sam? Is she in a sleeper cell of some sort?
No, she's in all of Moses. Yes,
she could be all
acrylic.
I'm in an acrylic cubicle. That's where I live. I live in a cubicle. That's actually a really good point. And like similarly to that, if you do have a large social media footprint,
my God, go through it before you interview somewhere, because there are people like me or maybe Jeff that are going to scroll way back in your timeline.
If well, I mean, companies, especially bigger companies, do that. I mean,
they do. And let me say this while it's still kind of in topic, is be mindful of the email that you're using.
Yes. For,
you know, sexykitty69@AOL. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yes. If you don't already have an email that's just either first name, last name, or first name dot last name, or last name, first name,
yeah.
Like make one, and you can still use your sexy kitty email for, you know, whatever it is you, else you do online. Maybe make the one your professional email.
Yeah, because everybody needs to have a side hustle.
Yeah, well, I mean.
Right, because it pays more. That's yeah, why we do that. Yeah, so, I really believe in the hire for attitude, train for skill. And I really don't want to reduce it to a soundbite.
But I think that's important. That was something I was thinking about, like with regards to this episode, like for people that might never have, like don't have any teaching experience and want to be in this field. Don't let that stop you when you go to an interview. If they ask you about your experiences babysitting are valid. Your experiences when you were in your church nursery taking care of those four infants are valid. Use those and then talk about how excited you are to continue doing this.
Well, and with the workforce situation in early childhood today, those experiences might put you on the top half of the experience list of the entire staff. I mean, that sounds kind of snarky, but that's just a reality in some situations. So the fact that you've interacted with children is a good thing.
That's great. So if you have any sort of experiences, mention them.
I think, Lisa, you talked a little bit about the interviews you do. How long did it take into an interview before you knew if this was a person that you wanted to work
so
with?
After they read and acknowledged it, we kind of did the quick, you know, tell me like 2-3 minutes of like little make nice, get to know each other. And then I'd bring them into the classroom instantly. That is where I can tell. Bring them in the classroom. You know, you can sit there and tell me lies for an hour in the office. And I'm not saying that's what people do. I'm not. I'm sounding kind of rude about it, but I want to get them into the classroom as soon as possible, because you can come in with 2 master's degrees in child development and I'm still going to be able to see what you're really bringing to the table the minute I walk in that door. Do you squat down?
Right.
You know, not that I'm like giving away all the little secrets, but if you don't get your butt down on the floor, and also I wouldn't again always make snap judgments, but if none of the kids came to you, you know what I'm saying? Like, I think kids are really good barometers of other people's energy like that. So if nobody was curious that I walked in the room with you, I might just file that away in my head. And then I would have you read. You can tell when you plop somebody down and, hey, I've got Miss Karen here and she wants to read you guys a story. I know you're playing. If you want to come over, we'll be sitting over here. And of course they come over because she's new,
like,
right? Who's this person? And I want to watch how you read. And
I think that is so important. That is, I actually, this is now brought back a memory of someone who was interviewing when I was teaching elementary to be an assistant in my classroom. And they had made it through that sort of like talking, get to know each other round with someone else. I hadn't interviewed them. And then she told me to come in and was like, hey, so-and-so is going to, you know, read a book and do a mini lesson with some of your kids during recess. Can you come in and kind of observe them? And I was like, yeah, okay. So I got to read their resume. I was like, oh, you know, they sound like, you know, they have some experience. It was the dullest, most monotone reading voice I had ever heard. And so this person starts reading, and the director of the elementary program who is conducting the interview formally is sitting across the room from me. She just looks at me and shakes her head. My head back. You're like,
nope.
Hey.
Yeah. I have a master's degree. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, I think it's like, now look, I haven't been on a date. It'll be, well, what on the, we're recording this, what, the 13th, the 12th?
Yes.
3 days, it'll be 34 years or something since Tasha picked me up.
So don't have a lot of memories here, but it's kind of like meeting somebody and deciding if you want to spend time with them, you know, really.
It absolutely is like that. It is sort of a first date.
Oh, go ahead.
No, you talk, Jeff, and then I'll talk.
I was thinking about this, and Sam, I haven't been interviewed for a job since before you were born. So it's a long time thinking about it, but I've done a lot of interviewing. I've been on the other side of the desk since then. And we kind of always looked at enrolling new families kind of as a job interview as well, whether they kind of clicked and we're going to fit. So I think that's something to consider as well.
So that's sort of similar to my point is that, and I'll be honest, I did not really start feeling this way until probably this current job that I have. And I wish I'd felt this way sooner. When you're going to a job interview, you are also interviewing that job.
Oh, 100%.
You are interviewing the person who would be your boss. You are interviewing the person you would work with. It is not, you know, try not to think of it as you're under a microscope. Try to think of it as much as you can as a reciprocal exchange. I always come to interviews with questions. I had a lot of questions for Larry. As evidence, just like, so what the hell is this about? But, you know, I always have questions either to ask, usually I try to ask my questions towards the end of the interview. A lot of interviewers will leave time for that. Like, did you have any questions? Or as things come up, like if we're on a tour, I might ask, oh, so how much time does each classroom spend outside every day? Because you deserve to know those things. Mm-hmm. And you also want to get to know the people that you are potentially going to be working with.
Well, I also think, Sam, to your point, is that let's say you have had some experience, right? And you kind of are at a spot in your career where you're pretty set on your style or your philosophy. Like for me, Lisa Murphy, the real Lisa Murphy, if I was to go on a job interview and accepted a position at a school that is 100% like Skinner influenced, behaviorally oriented, and does dittos and worksheets and flashcards, if I accepted that job, I have no room to be griping because they laid their cards out on the table. So I think that's also an example of that reciprocity.
That is really important. Like, don't, I, yeah. Like, you can, there might be a job where you're like, oh, maybe I could push myself to learn a new skill. Like, maybe, you know, oh, like one of my first teaching jobs had a couple different behavioral methods because it was a relatively inclusive school for children with diverse needs. So there were some things that I was like, okay, I'm willing to learn this to kind of feel it out because I know a lot of this other stuff I'm really comfortable with. But I also know some people that took the job and did not like some of the strategies the school was using. And you like that impacted their job performance because they didn't want to be doing it and they had every right not to want to do it, but they still accepted the job.
Yeah.
So Sam, have you, this place you're going to interview at, have you stalked them on Facebook and their social media?
Oh yes. for quite some time. Their handbook is available online. So I've read it. They have a very robust
handbook. That's the public handbook.
I know. Who knows what the private one is? Well,
I mean, that's got, if you're going out looking for a job in this profession now, that's got to be something that you do as part of determining.
Yeah. And, like our little, role play, I looked up their COVID response because I was very interested. I'm like, who were they talking to? Who are their, and I, you know, this word, who are their stakeholders? Like, who did they have to report to when they made decisions? The school I'm interviewing for is a private school. So they could make all of their decisions by themselves. They did not have to follow what the county school system was doing. Other schools did. They chose to do something similar, but not exactly the same. So that is important for me right now going into a new job in this current climate. What was your response? When did you make that response? How are you still in communication with families? Like, mm-hmm. This school, on their front page, sort of right when all of this happened, they had a really big sign for they had a name for it, but it was just family relief efforts. So it was if families needed food, if families needed advice, if families were now on unemployment and wanted to figure out how to file for it, like, here's the number of the person at the school you can email or you can call or you can email them and they're going to give you some advice. And I was like, okay, so they have a big center on community. That's really important to them. That sounds really nice. I am glad to hear that.
Whereas when Larry told me everyone was in cubicles that the children are like put in postal chutes into, I'm like, all right, so don't love it. Listeners, Jeff is making a face.
It fell out of my head. I might have a little bit of the, I think I got a little bit of the Alzheimer's. Hey, Sam.
Hey.
If you Google Sam Balch Early Learning, episodes of the Child Care Bar and Grill and that Early Childhood Nerd podcast are the first three, four things that come up. No, five, six.
Jeff Googled you.
So you do have a little bit of a social media footprint, and it's all audio. So,
it's fun. What's especially fun is that typically when I interview, that I use Samantha. But on all of these podcasts, I'm Sam. I want to see if it comes up if I'm Samantha.
Yeah, I'll have to check Samantha. You have your pod name.
I have my pod name. Yes.
So, any more on this topic before we wrap this up?
Hold on. I just want to say, when you Google Samantha Balch Early Learning, my article in Exchange comes up.
Oh, well,
see, that's good.
So there that's you go.
Feather in the cap.
I'm gonna go tag all your episodes with Samantha then, so they come up there now that you're getting famous. Funny.
She's gonna be famous.
I would say, and like general, like any sort of general interviewing advice you find on the internet is probably going to be good if you're interviewing for a job. And then I think right now my biggest piece of advice is remember you're interviewing them too.
Yeah.
Well, and don't oversell and underdeliver. You know, if you know, and that's just such a thing I'm a stickler for. You know, if you know when you walk in the door, it doesn't matter what you saw online or what they said on the phone. When you walk in the door, if you know in your heart you don't fit there, thank them for their time and excuse yourself. Otherwise, I get it. It's especially right now. I know people are struggling to keep the lights on and people are looking to get a job. But childcare is very different than a bookstore job, working at the grocery store job. You know what I'm saying? I'm not in any way pitting any job against each other. I'm just saying if you're looking right now for a stopgap, childcare position is might not be the best. To compromise what you know you're already bringing to the table if you're already in the profession. You know, if you're play-based and they've got the letter of the day and the number of the day, you're going to be freaking miserable.
You are. And now I would say this point in time, like, do not, I'm one of these people that's like, you know, living under the lie of capitalism that if I'm not productive, I'm not worth anything. This is a great time to remember that, like, if you need to step away from the field for a hot second to get a job as a barista to keep your lights on, no one's going to judge you for that. You can come back. People keep having children.
Yeah.
So they're going to be children.
So that's actually, some of the best people I've hired have been people who realized that they needed to step away for a little bit. Like, they wanted to make sure, because people in our profession, not all of us, but a lot of us have kind of indirectly been in the field for a very long time. We're the oldest of a sibling group, or we were the neighborhood babysitter. And, you know, at some point it was like, oh, time to think about a career. Kind of already like this. I'm kind of good at it. Let's, you know, keep going. And so to give yourself that time to step away to make sure it still is really what you want to do, not just what you've gotten in the habit of doing, that no shame at all.
Absolutely.
You could also slip the person that's interviewing you like 20, 30, 50 bucks or something, and just kind of grease the wheels to get the job a little bit if you wanted to.
You absolutely could do that, but yeah. I'm not going to recommend it.
Maybe bring cookies?
Not now.
Not during COVID.
Not now. No, you can bring prepackaged cookies from the store.
Fuck that. Anybody out there listening that wants to send me cookies right now, I will totally eat them. Message me and I'll get you the mailing address. I'll totally eat your cookies. If they're homemade, I'll eat them. I don't care. This has been the Child Care Bar and Grill podcast. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye.
This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.